This episode is brought to you by UiPath. Human achievement can be slow. 200,000 years to go from the wheel to your jalopy? Really? But today, 90% of the Fortune 500 are accelerating human achievement simply. When AI is everywhere, every process can be automated and accelerated. 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 UiPath, the AI everywhere foundation of innovation.
States and drug distributors are close to a $26 billion deal for the opioid epidemic. But where will the funds go?
Part of the hang-up is putting in provisions that make sure the money doesn't just go to fill potholes or go to the general, funds in these states.
And stocks bounced back after Monday's drop. We'll have more on the markets. Plus, why companies are looking into their archives for job applicants. It's Tuesday, July 20th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. U.S. stocks rebounded from yesterday's big declines. The Dow, which fell more than 2% on Monday, closed 549 points higher today, or 1.6%. The Nasdaq Composite and S&P 500 both rose more than 1.5%. Our markets reporter Karen Langley says investors saw some good buying opportunities today.
There wasn't an obvious reason that this rally occurred today. The Delta variant of the coronavirus and the spike in inflation that investors were worrying could disrupt economic recovery are still in play. But it seems like investors looked around and decided that there were some good deals to be had after prices had gotten knocked down on Monday. So some of the groups that you saw performing strongly today included financials, which were among the worst performers on Monday. Also travel shares like airlines and cruise companies. Those kind of companies have had big up days today after suffering pretty badly on Monday.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that the Delta variant now accounts for 83% of new COVID-19 cases, up from 50% earlier this month. The variant has been a contributing factor in the rise of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths in recent weeks, which have also been exacerbated by relaxed precautions and stalled vaccination rates. The Nasdaq is teaming up with a group of banks to spin off its marketplace for shares of companies that have yet to go public. Under the deal, the Nasdaq private market will be moved into a separate standalone company. It will receive investments from banks including Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and SVB Financial Group, owner of Silicon Valley Bank. Most individual investors can't buy shares on Nasdaq private market or other markets for pre-IPO shares. Under current regulations, such deals are typically limited to wealthier accredited investors. Netflix says it added 1.5 million new subscribers in the second quarter. That's more than it expected, but a big drop from a year ago when the streaming giant gained 10 million members during the lockdowns. Nearly 70% of new members this quarter came from the Asia-Pacific. Meanwhile, in the U.S. and Canada, Netflix lost 400,000 subscribers, the first time it has done so in those markets since the second quarter of 2019. And Blue Origin, the space company founded by billionaire Jeff Bezos, completed its first mission with a crew this morning.
Welcome back to Earth, first step.
Bezos and three passengers launched from the West Texas desert and flew to the edge of space, 62 miles above the Earth, before landing safely just over 10 minutes later. The former Amazon CEO hopes the flight will provide traction for an emerging space tourism market, which includes Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic Holdings. Blue Origin's broader goals include scoring large government contracts, the kind of deals that Elon Musk's SpaceX has already won. Coming up, states and drug companies are expected to reach a $26 billion settlement over the opioid epidemic. Will it bring an end to the lawsuits?
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
As we reported this morning, a $26 billion settlement between a group of states and drug companies accused of helping to fuel the opioid epidemic is expected to be announced, settling thousands of lawsuits. Drug distributors AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson, and drug maker Johnson & Johnson have been negotiating the deal for more than 2 years as a way to resolve suits filed by states and local governments. In a separate agreement, the state of New York has struck a more than $1 billion settlement with AmerisourceBergen, Cardinal Health, and McKesson midway through a trial. But will this mean the end of the suits? And where will the money go? For more, our reporter Sarah Randazzo joins us from Los Angeles. Sarah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So Sarah, we've obviously been following the nationwide opioid epidemic for years now. Can you just describe the scope of the problem, and is it getting any better?
The pandemic actually led to an increase in opioid overdoses in 2020. Some new data from the government just came out showing overdose deaths were up 37% last year from the year before that. And in the 20 years prior, from 1999 to 2019, we lost 500,000 people in the U.S. to both prescription and illegal opioids. So the opioid crisis, you know, involves both drugs that you're prescribed and illegal ones like heroin and fentanyl.
Now, you've been speaking with people close to the settlement negotiations. What can you tell us about the deal that's on the table? Who ends up paying what?
This $26 billion is split among four companies. The three big drug distributors that you mentioned, Amerisource, McKesson, and Cardinal, they would be in for $21 billion of the amount, and Johnson & Johnson would contribute $5 billion. And it would be paid over a number of years, up to 17 or 18 years, and it would go to states that agree to this deal.
Could the agreement still fall apart? What is it contingent on?
So, you know, they've been working for 2 years to get to this point of having a document with all of these details and complex machinations put together. And now that they have this, it now really kicks off a whole new process where every state in the country will get to say if they're in or out and if they want to participate. And then once they do at the state level, all of the local counties and cities that have also brought these opioid lawsuits can then say if they want to participate. And in the end, if not enough states sign on, the companies can still walk away. But after all this time negotiating, those involved are hopeful that they'll get enough participation and that, you know, all of this work they've been doing won't just get thrown out.
We also got word today that the three big distributors settled with New York for $1.2 billion. How does this individual state settlement fit in with the nationwide one you just talked about?
Essentially, that amount is what New York would be allocated under the $26 billion, but the reason they're getting it announced now and will be getting paid sooner is because they have a big trial underway, the first jury trial in one of these opioid cases. It's taking place on Long Island with a bunch of companies involved, including these three distributors. And so the distributors basically decided to carve out the New York amount from the settlement, and that will get them out of the trial. And Johnson & Johnson had done the same thing before the trial started, basically carving off the piece that New York would get under the bigger deal to remove them from the trial.
So that's the drug distributors and J&J. But what about the other drug makers? Where do they stand in all this right now?
Yeah, so there's still a few other drug makers involved. Purdue Pharma was the big drug maker that was a target of these lawsuits. They filed for bankruptcy under the weight of them, and they're negotiating their own multi-billion dollar deal with states that has also dragged on for more than 2 years. And then there's lesser-known drug companies, including Teva Pharmaceutical, based in Israel, and Allergan, which recently got purchased by AbbVie, and a company called Endo. So there's these other smaller drug makers that are still on trial, actually, in this New York case, as well as in California. So they're a little further behind in settlement talks, but lawyers say they might try to reach similar deals with these other drug makers, you know, once this bigger deal is put in place.
Sarah, what about the response? What do the drug distributors and manufacturers say about their role in the crisis?
So even as they've negotiated these big deals, they've really pushed back on having any culpability for the opioid crisis. They say, we made and distributed these federally regulated drugs that had a purpose that, you know, a lot of patients who are in pain need these medications. And so they've kind of pushed back on the general theme that they let too many pills flood into the market and that doctors were prescribing them for uses, you know, far beyond what was necessary. So there's still an inherent tension between the allegations that the states and others have brought saying, you know, you're the reason all these people are addicted. They still push back and say they only were selling a legal product. So even as the money is changing hands, they haven't said that they're culpable for anything.
And finally, Sarah, I want to ask about the effect this nationwide settlement might have. How would states and municipalities use the money? Where would it go?
Yeah, so that's a part of the talks that they've spent a lot of time on. And part of the hang-up is putting in provisions that make sure the money doesn't just go to fill potholes or go to the general, you know, funds in these states. And so there's going to be provisions in the document that say the majority of the money needs to be used for what's called abatement of the opioid crisis, which broadly means going toward services that will help people who are addicted, going toward police forces and hospitals that have been impacted and, you know, fronted a lot of costs to deal with opioid addiction. So there's a lot of focus on both sides from the companies and the municipalities on making sure the money goes toward helping addiction. But, you know, one place it doesn't go notably is kind of directly into the pockets of people who've dealt with addiction and families. I get a lot of reader emails from people saying, I was addicted or I lost a son to addiction. You know, can we get any of this money? And unfortunately, you know, it's still staying at the government level, but hopefully it will, you know, trickle down in some way to people who are impacted.
Wall Street Journal reporter Sarah Randazzo. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, the job market is red hot, and companies are desperate for help. So desperate that they're digging up old job applicants in their databases, people who applied ages ago. Of course, many of them have moved on. Here's our reporter, Tiping Chen.
I spoke to workers who had heard back from places they'd applied to as many as 5 years ago. Some of them, you know, were in high school when they applied for these jobs, and now they're in college and are finally getting chances to interview. For years, we did have employers ghosting applicants. But in an increasingly challenging labor market where they are struggling to hire folks, a number of the recruiting experts I spoke to really said this is a shift that we're going to be seeing more of in the years to come as more recruiters start to actually think more like retail marketers, right? And they'll be coming back to you and coming back to you, sometimes popping up in your inbox when you least expect it, and maybe will continue doing so until you tell them that you want to unsubscribe.
And that's What's News for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.